together here as dusk falls over the white, white woods, for winter is upon us. We are shivering because it's a little cold, but it's okay. Friendship warms the heart and the cockles.
I'm very excited to see where this is going.
Yes. Yeah. As we gather around our little hot cauldron, which casts up some heat, but again, the heart is what is truly the warm area here. I doff my pointed hat and raise my spell-casting single stalk of asparagus. For it is the new year!
No.
It's the new
year!
What?
Asparagus is like the least magical vegetable.
Come on, asparagus is great.
I had a celery stalk in my hand. I was like, no, that's lame. It's not brunch. I'm trying to do something new for the new year, you know, health kick.
Did you know if you say Bloody Mary in the mirror three times, you get more drinks?
Is it Sunday? Because that's what I dream of.
Speaking of Sunday, we are starting to wrap up our week if you look at the weekly calendar.
Interesting way to look at the week. That's
sure.
Not
I was
traditional.
Trying to do a segue there, and it wasn't really working. We are the second to last episode ever of Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Penultimate. Correct, Pete. Chapter 35, The Endless. We're going to be talking all about it today. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And yeah, this is a big episode. So big, in fact, that this completely threw me for a loop. It started with a previously on. We got a previously on recap.
Yeah.
The
did
of
not
the Netflix
see that
season.
Coming. It felt odd. It felt like different television.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, so let's actually start there before we get into the recap. Tell you what. I'll do the quick recap, then we'll talk about the previously on.
That is the way we do it.
Yeah. It's confusing because they're doing a previously on, which is a recap, and we got to talk about that, but we got to recap it before we can talk about the recap.
I'm confused.
Yeah,
me too. It's like we're in a mirror world.
Sabrina Morningstar, who is the Sabrina who was previously living in hell, married to Caliban, pretty chill with her dad, Lucifer, headed through a magic mirror to stop the Eldritch Terror, known as the Cosmic, which is a rogue solar system, and save all of Earth. It's not quite what happened. Instead, she ended up in a weird sitcom world where we encountered the original aunties from Sabrina the Teenage Witch, the original Aunt Hilda and Aunt Zelda. We didn't find out much more about it previously. We certainly do this episode. But we also know that there's a couple of Eldritch Tellers still to come. Find out a lot more about two of them, the final two this episode, The Endless and The Void. I believe we've heard tell of The Void before.
Oh, yeah, we have.
The scariest
but
one.
That's kind of all you really need to know to get into this episode, because everything else is laid out for you because this is a bizarre alternate world. I guess the only other thing that probably is important to know is that this Sabrina, beyond being married to Caliban, Sabrina Spellman, who is the Sabrina from quote-unquote our Earth, broke up with Harvey Kinkle a long time ago, is now together with original bad boy Nick Scratch.
Yeah.
So it does play into this episode a little bit. And the other things we find out as we get into the previously on, we're certainly reminded of the plot line where Roz was going blind. That is Sabrina's friend. That was solved by the fact that it turned out that she was actually getting the cunning, a second sight, that later on turned out she was a witch. I don't know. I think we can kind of jump into it, talk about this previously on. Yes, Pete.
There's a couple things, because when she jumped through the mirror, I think it was not the last episode, but the episode before that, and we saw the Sabrina, the teenage witch that we knew, or at least I did. I'm old enough to know because that's the Sabrina TV show we had before. I was kind of hoping Sabrina was jumping into the real, like, our world.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of like, oh, man, this will be crazy. She's on a TV set. Like, what's outside of that? And it was like, no, you just get the set. So I was kind of excited to see, like,
hoping Kiernan Shipka was going to come by your house at some point during the episode and be like, what's up, Pete? You enjoying the episode so far?
Yeah, something like that. It would have been cool.
You have positioned yourself as the ultimate candle boy, as halfway between Harvey Kinkle and original bad boy Nick Scratch.
To take your point really briefly, this is a light spoiler for the end of the OA, that TV show also on Netflix. I was like, oh, they're going in that direction? I was surprised.
Yeah. So this is overall thoughts on the episode. There's a lot of things that I really liked here that I thought were very fun. There were some fun moments.
Oh, yeah.
I was a little bummed after we got the original Aunties that it wasn't full-fledged Sabrina the Teenage Witch world, that it was still filmed, shot, scored, everything like Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which I get. I understand why they did that. I think also logistically, this apparently was the last episode that they filmed before they wrapped the season. Episode 8 is not the last one they shot. And I'm guessing just logistically, they were like, okay, this is the one where we could kind of have the set and the backstage and things messed up, and we could actually literally start to be wrapping things up here on Sabrina while we're shooting it, and that'll look right. Again, that second part is a guess, but I think that's probably why they shot it last, because it was the easiest thing to do.
I wish there had been
a different look, that's all.
It's like if they were fully in the sitcom world, is what you're saying.
Yes.
I mean, I agree with you, though I will say, because I was thinking of that, it felt sort of oddly halfway between these two ideas, but then it would have been maybe too far into that world, and it would have been harder for it to have any ground underneath it, perhaps. But I agree with you, a little bit more of a melding of the worlds, I think, would have been nice. Or if the world started super sitcom-y and slowly bled back into our Chilling Adventures of Sabrina world.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a way to have sitcom shots, different lighting through the camera when they're doing the sitcom stuff, and then you cut outside and it's Chilling Adventures world. It also, again, I think it was just a logistical thing, because reshooting this probably would have been too difficult, but the scene later on when Harvey is showing off footage of a previous episode and Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, fun bit, but again, it didn't make sense to me that that wasn't filmed sitcom style versus Chilling Adventures of Sabrina style. So I didn't dislike it or anything. It just felt... it didn't go all as far as it potentially could have.
I got to say, though, because we're just talking about that part, the part where they like start with the music and stuff and they skip past it, I was like, oh, man, that is so cool. That was a real fun moment.
And I get perhaps why, because I agree with you, Alex, it would have been fun to go that way. But most people, I would imagine, have not seen the original TGIF sitcom, because we're all young, not like Pete here, who I believe is a Johnny Carson fan or something.
Man. Hey-o!
So I do... Oh, Ed McMahon fan. My bad.
Pete actually started with a show of shows. That was his original fandom.
Uh-oh, now who's showing their wrinkly butt over there?
I'm a Sid Caesar man through and through.
Lawrence Welk for life. W game.
Now there's a guy with a thin stick that costs some magic, if you know what I mean.
Oh, wow. That's
just true. The ultimate witch.
You Welk. Always got to creep it up, don't you?
No, he had a conductor stick. That was his whole thing.
So if the audience for Chilling Adventures of Sabrina doesn't understand, doesn't know the sitcom, or doesn't really want that, then I do get it, where it's just a reference for the real Sabrina heads, and otherwise it plays as a regular episode.
And this is also definitely jumping ahead, but the implication is that Melissa Joan Hart was chopped up and fed to the rest of the cast, right?
And I believe that happened when they wrapped the sitcom.
Yeah. She was no longer a teenager, so what are they going to do with her?
You look for the Ambrose scene, like they used one of her actual arms in that shot.
Yeah, they preserved it.
That's crazy. Drives me crazy.
Oh, wow.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Pete knows what I'm talking about.
Rom-com Pete, I got you. One thing I wanted to say, when the Elder Terrors were like, we're all hanging out, and they were like, let's all be terrors, let's destroy the world. And Cosmic was like, I'm a series of planets, I'm going to crush other planets. And the Endless was like, I'm really into television, I'd like to sort of show run a television dimension. Yeah,
can I just have like a sound stage section on you?
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Oh, yeah, okay, as long as I get to be a big old planet.
Uninvited was like, I'm an angry homeless man.
Yeah. And television is very important. It's like the whole world.
Believe me, I know that. And do you think the darkness is like, eh, we're just silent miners. Don't, we're going to be first, so we're going to be pretty simple.
All right, well, let's get into the episode proper because there is still a lot of things that go on here. We kick it off where we last left Sabrina Morningstar. She comes in, the original Aunties are there, we get a laugh track, and then we immediately cut out, and it turns out that she is on a stage. She is filming. Father Blackwood is the director. He says, call me Faustus. And she gets the lowdown from the original Aunties. They all sit at a table, have some all the milk and sardines that they want.
Tuna.
There were sardines there as well.
That's when I knew something was up.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
That's a bad craft services table, I'll tell you that much.
As a cat owner, I was like, oh, I know who's running this show.
That's what you eat for dinner every night, right? Is a warm bowl of milk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Every time you reach for a hamburger, your cat goes, meow, and just slams your hand down.
Yeah, and then it's like, no, tuna for you.
Nice. But let's remember that the McRib is the meal of choice on this podcast.
You're goddamn right.
So we find out, as mentioned before last, Sabrina was sent to the green room. We got some teases that something awful is going on there. As we all know, we're all performers. You go to a green room, that's real bad.
Fight to the death. Have you ever seen the movie Green Room? Great movie.
No, I haven't. It's good, right?
Great horror movie. I definitely had shades of that, which I don't know if that was a purposeful reference or just the actual TV place production reference, but both good.
We also find out that Morningstar can't cast spells anymore. There's no real magic here, seemingly. And Sabrina proceeds to take a walk through the Sabrina sets. She can't leave. There are walls behind the doors. Beyond everything else, I thought it was fun to see backstage, literally backstage on the Sabrina sets. I thought that was enjoyable. What'd you guys think about that?
I agree. The whole place, seeing how it always gets me, seeing how sets are so close to each other. I just watched the behind the scenes in the last season of Schitt's Creek. And the fact that all of those locations were like in the soundstage right next to each other. It's just something magical about it, how they fool us into making that feel truly like a real place. This is great.
Well, I mean, this had to be like you were going to work, Justin. As a line producer, you deal with this kind of stuff all the time.
It's not I do, and it's also not what a line producer does.
Now, I mean, on that note, as a line producer, did you identify with Miss Wardwell in this episode or with Melvin?
Yeah. Both incorrect on all fronts, I guess. But I always identify with Melvin a little bit, just like, hey, it's time. What are we doing here? Yeah. Because I, as you know, I'm a meticulous adherent to the clock.
You're prompt.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a stage manager to my core.
Yes.
Wow. Justin, I don't know if you noticed this, but your nose was growing a little bit there. I don't know what's
happening.
Sorry, I'm late for nine other things right now. I have to go.
The original Aunties are asleep in their bed. Sabrina finds out all the books are fake. They're all props. There's marking tape on the floor. Love all of these details. I thought they were super fun. And the thing that I did like about this backstage nature is there's a certain sense, like you were touching on, Justin, watching all of this is alarming as a fan. It feels weird to be like, oh God, you're literally revealing too much of the magic of how this goes on here.
Yeah.
And I do think Sabrina Morningstar feels the same way.
Yeah, I agree. Like her unsettled nature throughout this whole episode really translated so well. And the fact that the same way the sets are all disconnected, the story felt really disconnected. At the beginning, you even hear her be like, well, our plan was this. And then she's like, this is a very bad plan. and it felt like the whole vibe was like, we don't have it quite together purposefully. So. And that gave her the opportunity to find the cracks that she did in this episode, which I thought the vibe of this episode was really unique, I thought.
Yeah, I'm surprised, though, they did this in the second to last because, like, I purposely don't watch, like, the Mandalorian behind-the-scenes stuff because it kind of ruins the magic a little bit. So, like, the fact of, like, when she's walking up to the books and I was like, oh, yeah, that's not going to – there's going to be no writing in there. Like – I was like, oh man, this is crazy because I have one more app and I'm going to be watching it being like, this is all fake. This is right next to the high school. Like, this is a little kind of like crazy. But I also really liked how they had the don't enter when the red light is on. That's like a classic kind of like stage production thing that I thought was really cool.
I 100% agree with you, Pete. I did watch The Mandalorian behind the scenes things, and I wish I hadn't, because meeting the guy who plays Baby Yoda, like, did you know they actually, he's a full-size guy that they use the Lord of the Rings trick to make him look small? Ugh. It's very upsetting, and he's rude. Like, he is very rude in real life, and I can't watch the show anymore.
Yeah, it's crazy, because it's like they're talking to him, and he won't stop chain-smoking, you know? And it's like, yeah. Come on, man. You're Grogu. You're better than this.
And I heard there's no actual makeup or anything. That's just how he looks. But the robe the robe is fake. I heard the robe is fully just CG.
The CGI. He's naked the entire time.
Oh, yeah.
Disney made him put the robe on nude Yoda. Yeah. He was originally written as nude Yoda.
Yeah, Jon Favreau was working on Chef, right? And he wandered up trying to get something from the food truck. Thinking it was a real food truck and not a food truck they were using in a movie. And Jon Favreau was like, put a CGI robe on this guy, and I think we have something here.
Yeah. That's the magic of Hollywood right there.
Yeah. Glorious. Absolutely wonderful. Melvin wakes up Sabrina. Her mirror is gone. She comes downstairs, already has her lines all memorized, which I thought was very impressive.
Hard to do.
Yeah. On the way down, that's tough. I got to tell, in all honesty, not that I will ever in a million years become a professional actor on a TV show, but that's one of the things that stresses me out about that thought is the idea of like, here's some pages, just memorize them real quick. You know? Yeah.
As a classically trained actor, I think you really set me up for that. Yeah. I agree. Less on TV film sets, but more so on stage. I'm like, I cannot blow this line. And it's long.
I have a question for a classically trained actor. Father Blackwood was like Kafka, what was that reference that went over my head?
That's not Kafka is the author Franz Kafka, and not a play, but a reference to the short story The Metamorphosis, where Gregor Samsa wakes up one day and he is a cockroach, and that's what they were referencing.
That's what happens to Sabrina. Yeah.
Well, that's why she was wearing that ridiculous cockroach thing.
Great short story. Read it. It's pretty depressing about the nature of our world.
I think at least part of it is about what's going on with Sabrina herself. Is she feels like she's transforming into something. She doesn't know what's going on. Things are changing rapidly around her. She's confused. Everybody, if I remember correctly with the Metamorphosis, everybody kind of treats it as normal. He's the only one who's like, hey, I'm changing into cockroach. And everybody's like, you got to pay your cable bill, buddy.
Well, everyone knows he's a cockroach. They're like, ugh, this is a problem. They just treat it like an everyday problem as opposed to like calling the police. Right. They're like, oh, now he can't earn money because he's a giant cockroach.
You call the police if you see a cockroach?
Yeah, every time.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, guys, shoot to kill.
Do you know what? I always call them up and I say, hey, guys, ACAB, all cockroaches are bad.
Wow.
So Miss Wardwell is a script supervisor, which was a fun role for her. Loved watching Michelle Gomez play that. As we mentioned, Sabrina's dresses up as a bug. There's laugh lines. And then we get the biggest event in Chilling Adventures of Sabrina history, Talking Salem.
Yes!
So great.
The original puppet, it looked like.
Yeah. Yeah, but was it also the original voice?
I didn't check that, actually, but I have to assume they got him back, right?
Because it sounded like it, but
that like Harvey Korman or something? Who played the original Salem?
Who played the original Salmon?
I don't know. What was the name of the first Salmon? Like, the first Salmon that ever existed. What was his name?
Well, Harvey Charlie Korman? Tuna is the first tuna. For sure. Great.
Well, I don't know. We'll look it up at some point during the podcast. But we do get Talking Salem. That was great. I was very happy about that. If we are going to wrap up the show in the next episode, at least we got Talking Salem before we go. That's something we've all three been asking about since the first episode.
Definitely.
Sure, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All of us really respect both that iteration of Sabrina and this one equally.
Well, I think the fact that she like really freaks out because Salem talks was a fun moment.
Yeah, it was her first strike.
Yeah, yeah, that was tough. You know, acting is rough, man. When you get three strikes and then you're fired, I mean, that's tough.
Yeah,
and it's crazy baseball crossover to acting. You know,
yeah, there's a lot of baseball crossover. The worst part about that is, you know how close George Clooney is to striking out? He's got two strikes.
Ooh. Oh, man.
And I'll tell you guys, I don't know if Midnight Sky is going to be, is going to do him right. It is interesting that Salem is the star.
It's Nick Bakay. Nick Bakay did the voice of Salem.
Was that the original?
Yeah, on the original. That was very hard to find. The Wikipedia page, very heavy on details about Salem's inner life. Very light on actual details about who played him on the show.
Yeah, secret, trade secret.
Yeah, yes. But do we know if Nick McKay was the voice in this episode?
No, I did not check that part.
Well, maybe you should get on that, you know what I mean?
Can we keep going with the episode? I'm sure somebody will tell us. Okay. So we find out, yes, about the three strikes thing. We find out Salem is actually the star of the show, which, of course.
Of course. That, yes. And it was funny the way the cameras were all pointed at her, mm-hmm. at Salem, and not the other performers. That was really funny.
If you have a talking Salem on a show, that's the start of the show, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
The next day, Sabrina realizes the days aren't passing. Time is not moving forward.
Groundhog Day type of scenario.
Interesting. Did you notice the Easter egg of the day that they kept repeating?
October 15th.
Yes.
Which is?
Wow. It's my birthday. And that's a huge Easter egg.
That's a strike for you, Salva. That's one strike.
Why not you? It's a strike for you too, Pete.
Oh, well, I knew, but I didn't want to say it.
Thanks,
bullshit.
Pete.
Huge Easter egg. Really? Yeah. Exactly. 100%.
I guess we have to keep repeating until we remember it's your birthday.
Yeah, 100%. Mm. We're trapped in that day.
Is that... No, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina started on Halloween, right? Like that was, it didn't start on October 15th?
I think it started on Halloween, if I remember correctly. The first season you're talking about.
Yeah. Her birthday is Halloween. Her birthday is Halloween, so the first day of the first episode may have been October 15th, maybe.
We need somebody looking up this shit, man. This
I'm just making shit up. Oh, you know what? Actually, it was October 29th, which is another significant day.
It was October 26th, actually. But what are you about to say? Is that your birthday or something?
That's my birthday.
Yeah.
We all knew that.
Yeah. We get a school scene, which is super fun. They're all doing lines.
Harvey and in October. That's crazy.
Oh, it's weird. Harvey and Sabrina kiss. She's initially very thrown up about it because he's using a tongue, but he says we're hashtag Cabrina. We're canon. Yeah, all of the stuff with this, it was very fun. Like tweaking of the fans behind the scenes discussions that they have about everything. The conversation later about Roz going blind felt very inside baseball in terms of what fans have said about that stuff as well. And I like that. I always like them poking fun at themselves. I thought that was fun.
Yeah, I love this. There's a lot of fun stuff in this whole section. In the scene, the next scene, I think, where Sabrina's talking to Hilda and she's using words like cutie patootie, straight out of the mid-90s when the original show was airing.
But there's also like the dark side to like a lot of the stuff about like Roz is being like, I don't get an arc or I don't get to do these things. And then like the way the, you know, Father Blackwood's like, do it again, but more sexy. I mean, that's, you know, that's unfortunately some of the like more creepier sides to it. But I think
the point of that, Pete, though, was to show that this show is different and that TV has changed a lot since that time. It was calling out like the bad TV tropes, because I think what's great about this show is all of these characters do get a story. Like Roz has a full story. She has the relationship with Harvey, and that feels like Endgame. Mm-hmm.
It does. It was weird because like for a while I really liked Sabrina and Harvey together. But then seeing them kiss was just like, oh, this feels so wrong.
Gross.
I also do think the Roz thing was a commentary on how they treated Roz in the first season of the show and how much the character has grown from there. I do wonder if there is a bit of behind the scenes talk from them where they felt like, okay, we didn't do the right thing with the Roz going blind storyline. Let's make her stronger. Let's make her more independent. Let's give her more to do and more interesting things to do, which has definitely happened as the show has continued.
Also, while we're still talking about this, the math store line was quite hilarious.
Yes, it was a good line.
Very
good sitcom
stuff.
Dialogue.
Yeah.
So Harvey invites her over to dinner. As we mentioned, the Caroline Ray Aunt Hilda talks to her. I like the fact that this Aunt Hilda also has the same sort of relationship with Sabrina. It was nice to get those sort of scenes that we're familiar with from the show, but through these new old actresses. She explains that it's the longest running show in history. She kind of just has to accept it. And then over at dinner, we get an interesting thing where Harvey has the drawings of the Eldritch Terrors on his wall.
Yes.
Why, other than tipping the hand to Sabrina, why do you think they're there? And the reason I ask this is because Harvey got them from a bone sesh with Roz in the real world. How did he get those pictures in this world?
Well, if Caliban is a head of, you know, kind of like props, maybe he had a bone sesh and that's why he had them.
With Harvey? Is that what you're saying?
That's fine.
Yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't make a ton of, I'd be hard pressed to find the logic of how they came to be there. But I do think the idea is that these characters later on in the episode, Sabrina's like, I have to save as many people as I can because these characters are still themselves. They're just sort of perverted, simplified sitcom versions of themselves. So I think that this Harvey, has them there, conjures them, maybe from even just kissing Sabrina, has them, they appear on the wall.
It's also to give, like, Sabrina hope that, like, okay, I'm not just, this isn't all just kind of, like, made up. There is still some reality for my world here.
Well, and to that point, we get this next scene, which we mentioned earlier, where they do some lines. It turns out to be from the pilot of Chilling Adventures. Then they're watching Chilling Adventures, and she's like, whoa, people are watching us. What's going on here? Which is a good reminder that all these things, this is the cosmic, even though they're dealing with the endless, and the cosmic is just sort of a mirror in a certain way for what is going on in the real world of Greendale. So anything that should, it doesn't exist on its own. It's not its own thing. It's only a reflection of everything that's happening in the real Greendale. So maybe that's why we get the pictures. That's why we're able to see Chilling Adventures, all of these other things. But then we finally do get to see Sabrina go to the green room. Ambrose is there. He's cutting up bodies. He reveals exactly what we all thought, that Salem is the endless. Ambrose was sentenced to the green room. Gross scene, another crazy Ambrose exposition dump as well.
Oh, yeah.
He's really cornered the market on saying what's happening.
Yeah.
Salem got Sabrina a new mirror, but has taken her magic mirror so she can't escape. She doesn't like this talk of Salem anymore. And then we get a bathroom scene. Prudence and Agatha are cheerleaders. We get the conversation about Roz going blind. Yes, Pete, what's up?
I just feel like this could have been an opportunity to have Dorcas, you know, in this episode. You know, we're having this kind of like made up kind of sitcom thing. Why not put Dorcas in there? It felt like, you know, she could have definitely been a cheerleader. There was another opportunity for Dorcas to be a part of this. I just feel like they could have made the episode a little bit more enjoyable.
Didn't you get a full serving of Dorcas last time? Like, aren't you just ready? Like, oh, I'm so full of Dorcas. I'll eat anything else. I think Dorcas was rightly edited out because the endless.
I think there's an entirely different Eldritch Terror right now who is sentencing her to a life of working on Fate the Wink Saga, which is almost on Netflix.
Nice. Yes.
Now that's the endless right there.
The real aunties turned out to work on the set as stand-ins for the fake aunties. That's a very confusing way to describe it, but hopefully you all know what I mean. The craft services is all tuna and sardines and crackers. So they
Stick
to the chips. Always. No thanks. I'm not going to eat tuna in the middle of a work day.
Tuna? I just don't know. My wife eats tuna right out of the little packet, not the can. I'm married to a cat.
That makes sense.
She could buy the packets where you just open them and eat that with a fork. I think it is truly, I'm worried I'm trapped in some sort of endless dimension.
I love the detail that we find out next that the stand-ins sleep under everybody else's beds.
This was fun and also seemed to be only about that.
Yeah, that was just, it was a great bit. Hearing the auntie sleep under the bed, Sabrina's stand-in sleeping under her bed.
Yeah.
Really fun. It definitely made me wonder again, even though they kind of excused it with the earlier line, whether they tried to get Melissa Joan Hart and she couldn't do it or wouldn't show up or something like that, because that would have been a perfect opportunity for her to just be under the bed at that point.
I think that would have been hilarious.
Yeah, and, you know, probably Dorcas would have been better than Elsbeth. But I think the fact that, like, when they found out, like, oh, the aunties sleep under the bed, and then Sabrina was at her bed, they did a great job of, like, having her sit there for a beat to be like, wait a second, I should check under my bed. I thought that was such well-timed, really well done.
Super fun bit. Then, as we mentioned, we meet Caliban, what he's been up to. He is working on the set as part of the crew. Morningstar explains that they were married and happy. He takes off his shirt for her. Very nice. His main characteristic. And it turns out Caliban is building the void for their series finale that's going to happen tomorrow, which sends Sabrina into overdrive at this point. Wakes up Harvey. Nick Scratch is watching, and we get our first real sense of Nick Scratch here, who actually is a bad boy in this episode.
Yes. Yeah, that's the thing. It was returned to the bad boy status in this ep. I had mentioned, like, oh, man, he doesn't seem like a bad boy anymore. Oh, well, I should have just kept my mouth shut.
Exactly, because he's not a bad boy. He's a bad boy.
Yeah. I did really like the fact of, like, Caliban talking about, like, oh, man, I had to endlessly take my shirt off. It was rough. And then took his shirt off. That was hysterical. And then when Sabrina went and woke Harvey up, he didn't have his shirt on. I was like, oh, they're having fun with this.
Yeah.
They're having a lot
of fun. Just a bunch of boys taking off their shirts and having fun, right, Pete?
Yep.
Sure.
Very fun. They all have big old clay balls just sitting in a box somewhere.
I did like how Sabrina said love is love. That was nice.
So they go, they take tomorrow's script from Miss Wardwell, and they discover that bad things are about to happen. They're confirming the information from Caliban. So Sabrina gathers everybody around, gives them the download on everything that's about to happen, that the void is coming, that they got to stop it. And another fun winky line from the original aunties where they explain, oh, these big events always happen. There's always earthquakes. We go to Hawaii. Somebody gets married. It's all back to normal right after that. Just a fun winky sitcom thing.
You could say about comics as well. Like, there's these life-changing events, and it just resets. So I like that as well.
And life,
man. Yeah.
Wow. See? Look, we just had a fun moment. A fun, like, season-ending moment right there.
Yeah, there you go.
We just collided.
October birthday buddies. Yeah,
that's right. Aww. Now that we know that about each other.
So the original aunties tell everybody to stop, to just kind of leave it alone because it's no big deal. Meanwhile, the real aunties tell Sabrina to meet them over in the office. And they realize at that point there are no more days left. Everything is coming to an end. Harvey is gone. Nick is now his stand-in. He says, no, I'm the real Harvey. Harvey got sent to the green room. Sabrina confronts everybody about the void. And wants to talk to the head writer and discovers, of course, that Salem is the head writer. Another fun visual.
Yeah, very fun. And I got to bet that's the room she walks through. Those are the actual writers for the show is
a cat actually runs Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Yeah. And the writers are all there just endlessly typing out pages.
Tragic. Another cat-dominated show.
If you put a million cats on a million typewriters, you would never get a perfect episode of Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Oh, so true. That can't be true.
No, that can't be true. Salem is also pretty easily convinced that the void is worse than anything else. She has a fun line in the middle there where she explains her situation and says it's in classic Sabrina fashion.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, this show is meta, especially this season has gotten pretty meta, but this episode is meta for not just itself, but all of television and all of, like, just the phenomenon of the Sabrina character throughout history.
Also, the whole, like, page 29 was really kind of fun to just kind of hold up, like, what happens after page 29?
Right, and that's the thing that convinces Salem, because he thinks he's working in tandem with the Void, but realizes that if the Void does come, if the Void does consume everything, then there's going to be no more Endless as well. So decides to team up with Sabrina. We're back in the scene. Sabrina talks to the old aunties, and we start to discover that the people who work on set have been corrupted by the Void. Salem and Sabrina try to escape. She goes to the green room. Nick is there. Salem is rewriting the script on the fly.
That
he
was
slips
fun.
Out a banana peel.
Oh, very the old good. Banana peel move. Classic.
And the Void starts consuming everything just as Sabrina and Salem jump through the mirror in the prop area at the last second. And that's how we set up the last ever episode of Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Ooh. I also like the to be continued. That was pretty cool because she talked about, like, there's no next time. There's mm-hmm. no, you know, so that was like a fun little thing. But the stunts that were happening, like, as she's running, like people like flying out of the scene was really cool.
Yeah, it was super fun.
Yeah, I agree. It sort of had, you remember the Adult Swim sketch, Too Many Cooks? It sort of had that vibe a little bit, where we get to see the episode break down as it's mm-hmm. as we're living inside of it. So that was cool. I did think it was interesting that Salem makes it through the mirror gate. So we're mm-hmm. going to have Talking Cat Salem in our
two
finale.
Salems.
Yeah. Two Salems, yeah. Yeah, that is interesting. That certainly changes the dynamic of power going into this finale now that we know that the Void is really the final enemy. I don't know what that necessarily means for the cosmic as well, because the cosmic, unless that is consumed by the Void, I guess. I don't know. But I'm confused. We'll find out.
Because yeah. I was wondering, as she jumps through with Salem, like, if Salem jumped through to help her, and, like, in this world, Salem talks, but in the real world, doesn't, or if we were going to have, like, two Salems, then I was like, well, we can't have two Salems, because then the cosmos will start colliding again.
I mean, we already have Miss Wardwell and Lilith. We have two Sabrinas. Two Salems is no big deal.
I'm curious if the Salem will take on a different form as it crosses the dimension, since it is a horrifying Eldritch terror. So it's yeah. like, to be a little talking cat feels a little weird. I also thought it was interesting, in the previous Sudan, they establish where all of the Eldritch terrors are. Mm-hmm. And we don't ever see them here. So as we've speculated, it feels like they're going to harness all of their trapped terrors and perhaps use them against the Void in the last episode.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, they've definitely done a really good job of that in past seasons of, in surprising ways, bringing everything together. So that should be cool. I don't know how it all comes together, but it should be neat. For the second to last time, which reigns supreme in this episode, Pete?
Well, I just wanted to say, like, you know, a lot of times, like, there's this talk of, like, actors work for nothing, but, like, it was believable that actors would work for milk and tuna. I wanted to kind of mm-hmm. point that out, like, you know, mm-hmm.
the residual
struggling actors out there, you know, doing a lot of stuff. I mean, you know, you wouldn't know anything because you're classically no. trained, so you're an upper echelon of actor, but, you know.
The residuals on milk are crazy. Like, I'm getting yeah. paid in tiny morsels of cheese for the rest of my life, really.
Smart. It's a smart way to do it. Okay. I don't know. Like, it was really fun to see the combined cast all kind of working together. But as far as, like, characters kind of playing different versions of themselves, I really enjoyed Ambrose. Like, it was such a relief and great moment to see Ambrose. And he was kind of manic, but I really, really enjoyed it. So I'm going to say Ambrose.
Justin, what about you?
I got to give it up for the original aunties from the sitcom coming back. And doing, having sort of a dramatic turn. It wasn't just the joke of this. They had to play the sitcom versions of themselves, and then sort of versions of those characters that are a little bit tense, that are a little mm-hmm. bit like there's something scary underneath them. And they play that really well. And I haven't seen these actors very much since the original show that old man Pete told me about. So I don't know what they've been up to, but it was really impressive to see that they could really deliver in this episode.
Oh, man. Oh, go ahead, Salem.
Oh, I was just going to say, my pick is Talking Salem.
Yes, sell them. Thank Come you. On. My gift to Justin on his October 15th birthday was I wasn't picking Talking Salem, but then he didn't take it. So
I think you're perhaps forgetting, Pete, that I don't like Talking Salem.
He doesn't at all. He hates it.
That's, I did forget about
that.
That
was what I was mentioning. I was intimating that earlier on. But I love Talking Salem. I've been waiting for this since the first episode of Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Me too.
As much as I like the Salem in the show, he's not sassy enough. We finally get sassy Salem, and that's great. It made me so happy again, two episodes from the end.
I think the Salem in this show is plenty sassy. A lot of fun little tail twirls, really showing that cat's butthole right when you like are like, what? Ooh.
Yeah. Sassy. Yeah, there's nothing sassier than showing off a butthole, right?
Oh, my God. What just happened? What just happened?
Hey, I've done a fair amount of burlesque, so I know about when to show a butthole.
So we have one episode left of this, so stay tuned for that. If you'd like to support this podcast and other podcasts, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. Chat with us about Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to the show at Riverdale After on Twitter, at Riverdale Dark on Instagram, Riverdale After Dark on Facebook, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, keep that milk and tuna coming, buddies.